AI is not going to replace jobs. You have to be prepared, give up your weekend. You have to just be prepared to like sacrifice.
And today's guest is an award-winning entrepreneur, writer, podcaster, and exec. Her career has worked with top-tier roles across brands like Standard Chartered, HSBC, Barclays, JP Morgan.
Working in the financial services in DEI, it was on my vision board, and so I saw my dream role. And I remember one of the recruiters or an agency that had that role, they'd said to me, look, like, this is just out of your league. And then February, just before the pandemic, I got a call from one of my other agencies, and they were like, oh, Vanessa, I've got this role.
Were you always an introvert, extrovert? She is the founder and the CEO of Girls Talk in London.
I'm an introvert, but I present as an extrovert.
She also has the Hill app, like 60,000 plus women to date.
Every single woman that's come to an event, or every single woman that's been inspired by our social media or my podcast, like, I think that's my legacy. Like, I won't even know the lives I've touched. Like, the AI gets you to about 80%, but that 20%, you still need a human.
What would your advice be for them to be able to manage both a side hustle and also having a career? Because you did both. Vanessa? Welcome to the Leadership Podcast.
Oh, thank you for that intro. That's so nice. I think it's just like when you're hearing back, okay, like your CV, your career CV, it's like, okay, actually, wow, what a journey. So thank
you're
you.
You're impressed by yourself.
I know. Because sometimes, you know, when you're in your work, you don't always sit back and you're like, actually, yeah, it's been a journey. So thank you for that lovely intro. Thank you.
No problem. I guess I'm actually going to lean into that. How often do you sit back and reflect on your actual journey? Are you that kind of person, or are you kind of person who just keeps on going?
I just keep going. I rarely, and it's not the best trait, but I rarely like celebrate achievements. I'm always like, right, okay, on to the next, keep moving. I never really take some time to just like reflect and look back. Yeah.
Okay. With that said, I want to take you back to, I want to go back to younger Vanessa, let's say 8-year-old Vanessa.
Okay.
Who would I find? Who would I be talking to at that point in time?
Interesting. So I was born in North London, Highbury and Islington. So, yeah. Oh, is that where you're from?
I grew up in Islington.
So let's
I grew up in the right corner from you, actually.
Yeah. Yes, I lived on Highbury Hill. So 8 years old, I was obsessed with Oprah Winfrey. So I actually discovered Oprah's show at 8 years old. And I just remember growing up, say, from about like four years old. So when I was just started school, you know, my parents were very strict. So I'm from Zimbabwe. And then they were like typical African parents, academics, you know, lawyer, doctor, accountant. And they got me this like medical doctor's kit for like, I think my fourth birthday. So I was kind of told, you must be a doctor. But at 8 years old, I remember like coming home from school and it was on BBC Two. And I just saw this black woman, hosting this talk show, and I just remember like all these white people in the audience were like listening to her, and I'd never seen a black woman command a room and like have her own show. And I was like absolutely mesmerized by Oprah Winfrey. And I also remember when I was at school, on my report cards it would be like, Vanessa's very academic but she talks too much, she disrupts everyone, she gossips, she needs to stop talking. And so seeing this black woman who she's actually making money talking at 8 years old, I really wanted to actually get into journalism when I was eight. But then my parents were like, absolutely not. Like, you're still going to do your medical degree, even at that age. So that was where I was when I was 8 years old.
Oh, so from then, like the sparks, the embers were already there around this. You wanted to utilize that gift of talking.
Yes.
And meeting people. Interested.
Yeah.
So when did you move to Essex?
So it was around that time, actually. So like around I can't remember like exactly how old I was, but maybe like around 10, 11, we moved to South Ockendon. This was just before I started secondary school, and that's when I moved to Essex. And yeah, and I met my best friend, Eleanor. So I was like, I moved like halfway through year six. So yeah, I moved to Essex around sort of like 10, 11 years old.
Were you always an introvert or extrovert?
Introvert. It's really weird. I'm an introvert, but I present as an extrovert. Everyone thinks I'm an extrovert, but actually, no, I'm very shy. And I get quite nervous, like, meeting new people. And, like, even when I have things like having to sort of socialize, even if it's with family or friends, I need, like, days to recover. Like, it takes a lot out of me. Yeah.
So those words, like, shyness and even nervousness to me, I would never have put that with you when you see the persona that you have now, and especially how you show up in this day and age. I'm very surprised to hear that.
No, yeah, a lot of people are, but I actually am very introverted. So like in social settings, it's really weird. I think people are surprised when they meet me, and I'm just quite, I can be quite quiet sometimes. Like I'm sociable, but you can just feel I'm not as I present maybe as people might think I'm going to be. Mm. Yeah.
So when you move secondary school, at that point in time, obviously, you're still following what your parents want you to do. But even in that secondary school time, were you utilizing any of those skill sets like Oprah and starting to talk and lead communities and different things like that? Or was that just shut down for that period of time when you were at school?
I think, to be honest, it was shut down. It was very much like academics, books. Like, that's it. My parents just shut down any journalism talk. They were like, nope. So I was just focused on becoming a doctor. That's what I thought I really wanted to do. And that's the path that I went down on. So it wasn't until I was about 20, 21 when I realized, you know, what I wanted to do.
But then when you were at uni, you started a community there.
Exactly. So that's when I realized. So I was doing biomedical science and I had planned to then do graduate medicine. I did the GAMSAT, which is the exam that you do after your degree. But then during university second year, I just was very inspired. So a lot of my friends, they had set up like their own businesses. So I went to Brunel University, and Brunel University is very entrepreneurial. So everyone had a side hustle, and that's when I got the courage to say, actually, I'm going to sort of just test different ideas. So I started out doing events, and actually I was the only like female promoter that was flyering in the West End to get people to come to like my birthday parties and things like that. So started doing events, and then I came up with the idea to start my first social enterprise, which was when I was 20. And that's when I started to sort of see, actually, my passion is around like business. I just fell in love with it.
The Rafiki Network.
Yes, yeah.
And when you hear you, it's interesting, when I hear you describe it, it's like, oh, I just started this business and it's there to bubble. You had over 2,000 like young people in London, like locked in, delivering like training services. It was a huge thing.
It was very, very successful. So we would mentor young people who were, I guess, at risk of joining gangs and getting involved in gun and knife crime. So we were like in areas like Lambeth and Southwark, and we kind of worked with housing associations, and we would deliver, like we would mentor them, but also deliver events, like career events as well, to kind of just inspire them. So we would bring, and at that time, you know, doing panel events and careers events wasn't the thing. But at that time we brought, you know, like young people who were from their areas, but maybe had set up their own companies to come and talk to these kids about alternative ways. Yeah. So it was really successful.
And then obviously you did that for about 5 years. And then while doing that as well, you went back and got your master's afterwards.
Yeah. So my master's, because I kind of doing Rafiki Network. And then when I finished my degree, I knew I didn't want to do medicine. But obviously my parents were like, well, you best find a job. So what I was doing was working in the city in the financial services and running Rafiki Network. And then I realized I wanted to upskill myself on how business can be, you know, for good. So I did my master's in sustainability and management at Royal Holloway to kind of like upskill myself on how, you know, you can either start a business or work with like a FTSE 100 company and ensure that we call it ESG now, but environmental, social and governance, looking at that part of, you know, large corporates and how they contribute to society and the world around them, because I knew that that was my passion. So I did my master's to kind of upskill myself.
For anyone listening right now and they're thinking, okay, I'm at a young stage of my life, I've got a side hustle, how do I do both? What would your advice be for them to be able to manage both a side hustle and also having a career? Because you did both.
You have to be prepared to give up your weekends, number one. Like, I have been working every weekend. I mean, I was doing that maybe from, I'd say maybe sort of 10 plus years, like when I was doing my side hustle. So it's a long time that I was doing, you know, working at the weekend. After work, I would open up my laptop and start working. So I think you have to just be prepared to like sacrifice, because juggling the two. So, you know, people will say it's your 5 to 9, but really realistically, it's like your 5 to 10. Like every evening I was sort of working on my side hustle, organizing events, just, you know, pouring into it. So it's a lot of, you have to really sacrifice the time, manage your time well, to juggle the two.
What would you say if I asked you, like, do you think it's worth it? Because that's a massive amount of sacrifice. So from your perspective, as you've done it and mm-hmm. you've been doing it successfully as well, is it worth it?
It's worth it if you're getting some income. So if you're getting, you have to assess your revenue. And I think for me, what was great is I had two sources of income, which I think is fantastic. I think everyone should really have multiple streams of income. So I think it's worth it if you're getting a substantial amount of revenue. So I think you have to really be selective of who you work with or who your customers are, how you price yourself. And it's definitely worth it because it, that extra income that I made through running my business was able to kind of get me on the housing ladder and, you know, give me additional income. So it was definitely worth it, I guess, financially. And also I was building like my legacy, and I was building it to a point where I then left my job to kind of focus on it full time. So it was definitely worth it, putting in all those hours, because now I've been doing my business for like 4 years now, full time.
What is your legacy?
It's interesting. I don't know. I think my legacy is, I guess, it sounds cheesy, but really my legacy is like every single woman that's come to an event, or every single woman that's been inspired by our social media or my podcast. Like, I think that's my legacy. Like, every single person that's been impacted by Girls Talk or The Hill in our content and our events, like, that's my legacy, and it's very individual. So I might not even know, like, I won't even know the lives I've touched, like the impact. So that's what I would say my legacy is.
What is it that drives you? What's the mission that drives you to keep on going and create an event or bringing more and more women into the space that you are building?
I think it's just like, I'm just like really motivated to see people like win. I think I'm just that kind of person, but I love seeing successful people. It makes me just so inspired. So I love all these, you know, I love watching YouTubes and seeing people live, you know, luxuriously. Like, I just love it. I love to see people win. It makes me feel good. So I love helping people live their best lives, be the best version of themselves. That's what motivates me. Like, being able to help someone get more money, start their own business and just be successful. That's what I love. And just helping people feel good about themselves is what just really inspires me. And I think what I've come to realize, and I think we were talking about this before we started, but, you know, I am the queen of the pivot, and I'm quite innovative with the business models that I have. But what hasn't changed is my mission. So everything, every single thing that I do has to make people's lives better. So whether that's, you know, if I'm working with, like, for example, when I used to work at Standard Chartered, I really wanted to work at Standard Chartered Bank because of their ethos. They were like, you know, we do banking for good. we work in emerging markets, but a big part of our work is around, you know, giving people access to banking. So every company that I work with, whether it's, you know, internally or whatever I do, has to have like an impact to make the world a better place. So that's kind of what's the common thread for me.
And speaking of some of the companies that you have worked with, especially when you're in that corporate world before you went full time, you've worked with some major global
brands. Sorry, my mic dropped. Sorry, back to that again.
I didn't have to write that.
Sorry.
You worked with major corporate brands and your mic drops.
That was like, ooh, spooky.
How have you been able to get into those spaces and land those jobs that you've had done at a very, very high level? And what was your experience of being in corporate, especially as a black woman?
Oh, you know, it's interesting. So I think my side hustles also helped get me like into some of these jobs as well. So making sure like that kind of helped me be well-rounded. So I think building up my personal brand helped a lot to get to kind of companies like Standard Chartered Bank. I remember that role specifically. I actually, interesting story, like I had put that role on my, so I'd put Standard Chartered Bank on my vision board like the year before, before my role came out. That was like my dream company to work with. I was like, I really want to work at Standard Chartered Bank. In their DEI team, because it was global and everything. So I put Standard Chartered on my vision board 2019. It was on my vision board, 2019. And then I remember January 2020, I had seen that they were hiring for a director, but diversity and inclusion specialist. But at that time, I'd been working at an in-house law firm. I'd been at UK Parliament before, but I didn't have any experience working in diversity and inclusion in the financial services. So I'd worked in banking, but never in DEI. And I thought, okay, this is going to be a long shot. Like, I haven't got experience like working in the financial services in DEI, and it was on my vision board. And so I saw my dream role. And I remember one of the recruiters or an agency that had that role, they'd said to me, look, like, this is just out of your league. We've got people who had like 15 years of experience in DEI who were like being considered for this role. Like, it's just, you're not going to get it. And this was in January. And so I just sort of like left it or whatever. And then February, just before the pandemic, 2020. So that was like a month after that recruiter said to me, oh, you're not suitable. I got a call from one of my other agencies and they were like, oh, Vanessa, I've got this role. Have you heard of it? Have you heard of this bank? They're called Standard Chartered Bank and they're looking for a diversity and inclusion specialist. And I was like, oh my God, I saw this role last month. And then she was saying that the hiring manager is very, very pedantic. Like, she's very selective. She's had hundreds of applications and she's turned them down. But I thought you might be a really good fit. Would you like me to put your CV forward? And I was like, this has been on my vision board. Like, you calling me, please put my CV forward. And then long story short, I had had multiple interviews and then I got my offer just before the pandemic. So getting in there was vision boarding, manifesting. And, you know, initially I was kind of told I wasn't going to be good enough. And then somebody else thought I was, and literally the lady had hundreds of applications, interviews, loads of interviews, and it was meant to be for me. So I'm kind of a big believer in vision boards. I think everyone should have one, and just believe in yourself. Like, you've got to just believe in yourself, and I think that's what got me there. It wasn't necessarily, it didn't work out. That's all I would say in terms of like what I thought it would be, but it was just, it showed me the power of visualization and just like, don't listen to like naysayers. Yeah. So that's how I got in, really, I would say.
What was it about? Do you know what was about you that, even though you didn't have the experience other people had, she saw something in you that said yes to for you to actually get the role when you met with the hiring manager?
Yeah, I think it was basically like how I interviewed So I think me being able to speak and sell and talk to people, it was like how I was able to sell my experience. So her feedback was, we have people who do interviews and they can't answer or give examples. So I was very clear on giving concrete examples of how I was able to deliver projects. And I remember talking her through my challenges at UK Parliament and really being able to storytell. And she felt like, yes, this person, I understand how she thinks. I understand how she is able to deliver projects and have impact. Because there are a lot of people that, no offense, are just job worths, right? They just get a job and they don't do anything. And she wanted to avoid these types of people. She wanted to have someone that was a doer, a grafter. And I was able to walk with her step by step on my thinking process. And initially, that's what she said to me, which is why I got the role.
That's the power of storytelling is such an important thing.
Yeah.
I think so many people underestimate. And mm-hmm. I will say the higher you go, the more important it is for you to tell your story. Because you can know a lot, but if you can't communicate with people, they're never going to know. They're never going to be able to connect the dots.
Mm-hmm.
So you've been able to go into those roles and actually talk about your challenges in a way that helps open her eyes to what is possible. Such a powerful example of how to utilize storytelling and communication.
Definitely. That is the key. I think people underestimate storytelling. That's what interviews are. It's really around storytelling and being able to share how you think and how you do things. It's not like an exam. I think some people treat interviews as an exam. And it's like, no, it's just you telling your story and being able to communicate that. Yeah.
How do you typically deal with naysayers or people who say you can't do something? Because you had one recruiter say, nope, you need X, Y, Z. Had another one reach out to you and say, no, I believe in you and obviously should put you forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you've had that all the way throughout your career and some of the different things you've stepped into. So how do you handle that? Like, what's the good, the bad and the ugly, I'm going to say, ways and levels of how you've handled negative criticism or naysayers?
Do you know what? I have really good friends. So I remember with that Standard Chartered, the guy, the first recruiter who told me I wouldn't get it. I was with like my two friends, Samantha and Natalie. We were in Miami and it was actually around my birthday. And we went to Miami for my birthday. And they were like, this guy's a fool, man. Forget him. Like, you'll get it. You'll get like, there'll be another way to get around, like message the hiring manager. So the naysayers, I have really good friends that I can just that really pour into me. And they're like, girl, like you can do it. So I'm very, very, very fortunate to have a really strong network of friends. My mum is very supportive. My brother is very supportive. So when I have those moments of like self-doubt, they just are able to pour into me. And I also think, it might sound offensive, but I also think people are fools. That's what I think. I think this person's a fool. Like, if you don't believe in me, I'm going to show you. Like, you just, there's something not right there. So I'm just like, whatever. I don't internalize it. I just think this person's foolish. They don't know any better. And I don't listen to it. Because I've had so many people that, you know, say so many things. You're too old. You know, this industry is too saturated. It's not going to be possible because they put their own limitations on themselves. And you just have to understand that you know yourself better, you know your talents better, and just keep going. And I think I get motivated by wanting to prove people wrong. That's kind of like a motivation for me. I'm like, actually, that kind of gives me fuel. And I'm just like, yeah, I want to prove everyone that doubts me wrong. Yeah.
What is it that people can easily miss when it comes to you? Because they can see the success, they can see the impact that you're having, they can hear the mission that you just described. But that's the, I want to say, the external. There's the other side, which I know the weight of delivering those things in external is a lot, typically speaking. So what are things that people can typically just miss when it comes to who Vanessa is?
I think they miss that, like, I'm actually a human, you know, and I have feelings. And when you're in the space where you're working with community and people, people can be so ungrateful, number one. They can be quite harsh. They don't know how emotionally taxing it is, especially when you're kind of delivering at a high level. So I get so many messages DMs, and it's overwhelming. And people will say, you know, I sent you a DM the other day and you didn't get back to me. And it's like, honey, I can barely brush my teeth and comb my wig. Like, they don't understand, like, how difficult it is. Like, everyone is trying to get a piece of the pie. Can I have a call with you? But I just don't understand the amount of pressure. It's like, it is a lot. I cannot. Or the one thing I get all the time is, and this is no disrespect, but it's like, there would be times when we would have thousands of people who would come to events in our programs, and somebody would say, oh, hi, Vanessa. And I'm like, you know, can you just remind me, how do we know each other? And because I don't know them, they'll be so offended. And I'm like, girl, do you know 2,000 people? Like, if 2,000 people were lined up, could you tell me their name? It's like, you know, and I'm trying to get them to understand that. Please don't take it personal, but it is a lot. Like, when you do these types of things, you're not going to always remember every single person's name. You're not always going to have time for every single person. And it's exhausting. It's like, because I'm having to push, champion, manage behind the scenes. It's not easy. It's not like these companies flock to you. You have to follow up and pitch and sell. And it's a very hard business. The business industry that I'm in is around social impact. It's around equality. It's not an easy industry to be in. And you're having to fight every day to stay in the game, to make sure your business, you know, stays afloat. And I think people just think it's easy. And it's very, very hard. There's a lot of hours. And you're not, you know, like I always say, you know what, for the headache I get, I could just, you know, go and do a profit making business. It's not a fun sector to be in. And I think that's what they don't realize. It's very, very hard. Mm. Yeah.
I actually appreciate you saying that. I think it's a recognition, that first statement you made of Vanessa's human.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can so easily miss that part and just see the accolades and the titles, mm-hmm. or see the person who's up front and forget that, no, that person is also human. That person has feelings and exactly. emotions, and they're going through stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But also the recognition of what it takes to build something. And I think a lot of times when people have never done at that level, you can easily miss how much effort it does take and how draining it actually can be.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess question then for you is, what does rest look like? And what does support look like? I know you've mentioned your two friends, for example, who, mm-hmm. who are there with you. But what do those two elements look like so that you are not carrying the weight of everything that you are doing alone?
You know, I'm very terrible with rest. I'm not going to lie. Like, even right now, I'm burnt out. I'm struggling, fighting for my life. Because, you know, when you're running a business, especially this year, it's been very difficult for diversity and inclusion. So I've not been able to have a summer off, because I'm trying to make sure that we are here for the next year. So I get burnt out very easy. I don't rest as well. I'm terrible for that. I'm trying to get better. So for me though, like, rest looks different. Like, for me, rest isn't necessarily now like having like 3 weeks holiday. For me, rest, like what I've been doing like for the past summer, is just taking it easy, like having slow weeks. Like, I have maybe a couple of things in my diary, but being a bit of a quote unquote bum, as I would say, maybe I'm getting up late. Maybe I'm taking it a bit more slow. I'm not going like at the usual pace that I usually go at. And that's what rest is to me. But also, like, one of my friends, her name is Remy, she's been very like tough on me to say, girl, you need to get yourself together. You need to make sure that you are having like your massages every month, go getting acupuncture, get Reiki, really think about how you look after yourself. So even like today, I've got a massage booked. I did acupuncture on Friday. So I'm trying to like put these things in place where I'm just trying to look after my well-being. If I can't take, you know, a week's holiday, making sure in my week I'm doing something that's going to like fill me up. And again, support looks like your friends telling you, you know what, Vanessa, like, sort yourself out. Make sure you're getting that rest and, you know, pouring into you. That's what support is, and that's what rest is. And it's not always about having, you know, 3 weeks off. Although I did have like a 6 week break in December last year where I went to South Africa and just took time away. So I kind of, I felt like I was really, really well rested, but I had no idea I was coming back to the, I don't know if I can swear, but the SHIT storm, that was Donald Trump. So I had no idea that was that's what I was going to come back into. So that rest and renewal has just gone down the drain. But that was really good. But I think just having like regular periods of just pouring into myself is what it looks like to me.
You know, you say that it went down the drain. I'm going to flip it around. I'm going to say it was actually preparation for you, because you were able to come back and deal with that.
Which is true.
Had a much higher capacity to be able to tackle what was going to be a massive thing that you never planned for.
Yeah, I think looking at it that way actually is really good. Yeah, because I kind of was able to, yeah, I was rested and then I kind of just went full throttle. So yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right.
I guess the way you just broke it down as well, is like, typically it's like, yeah, everyone take a break or that kind of stuff. That's great. But actually, what are the things that you can do in your day-to-day life that ensures that you are still looking after yourself? Because a lot of times you're the one that makes of everything. And if you don't look after you, then everything else is definitely going to fall apart. And I always say to a lot of leaders I work with, like, if you're operating from a place of burnout, are your ideas the best? Or would it be better if you just had even a little break and then you were thinking a lot more clearly and straightforward? And I guess it's easy to say when you're in the storm and you're like, oh my gosh, there's so much stuff happening. I just cannot physically bring my body down just to be able to relax, because I know the things are happening around me. And I'm like, it is hard. But that's also why it's important to be able to do it.
Exactly. Definitely. Definitely. You have to. And that's what I've realized, like, even me as a leader, like, I can't think clearly if I'm just burnt out. So for me, for my business, I've got to just make sure I take that time out. Yeah.
When you think about what is that you want to achieve going forward, regardless of the current landscape, which is definitely flipped a lot of things on its head for sure, but in your vision or in your vision board, what for you is like that continuing mission that Vanessa wants to keep on pouring out into the world?
You know what? I think the next kind of like 20 years, I want to just focus on me. So I feel like I've given a lot to people in this space, and I kind of want to now focus on, I'd love to like start up just a business for profit. So I still want to make sure I'm doing good in the world, but I think I'm kind of slowly now moving away from that, you know, social impact, and now looking at a business, if that makes sense. I think the next 20 years is going to be about what I want, what's going to benefit me, and moving on to that, because I feel like I've got really good skills. I know how to run a business, I know how to run a, you know, manage a P&L, I know how to lead a team, I know how to speak to global execs from my corporate life. Like, I feel like I've got I'm well-rounded. I want to put these skills into actually what's going to benefit me now. So like, now is my time. I'm at this point now where I want to live for me. I've given so much to my community. And I say that in a humble way, but I've given so much to so many people that now I feel like the next chapter is about me.
Why do we caveat that? I've given so much to my community, I mean that in a humble way. Why do we typically caveat the humble part? I'm always curious.
I know. But you know what? You know where we are in the UK. Everyone's like, oh, don't get too full of yourself. You know, you've got to be humble in the UK. If I was an American, that'd be no problem. But I'm just having it that for the miserable Brits that might be watching this episode. Just to make them feel better, you know. Very British.
In fact, I'm going to let me double down on that. With everything you've done, everything you achieved, how do you stay grounded?
My parents, like, and my mum, like, the way she raised me was really good. Like, she you know, like, I still got my ass whooped when I was growing up. And that literally humbled me. Like, I was always humble. Like, and my mum still to this day, she will fight me. Like, if I overstep, I will still get my butt whooped. And so that's what keeps me humble. like my mum definitely does not mess around. And that's the honest truth. Like my parents are the ones that have just been like the way that I was raised. I think staying grounded starts from like when you're a baby, and how you instill the values and how you, you know, raise your kids to be kind. I was always taught to be kind, to be generous, to be loving. And I think that's what's always carried me through. And so my mum was always very strict. She would always say, if someone tells you a secret, you do not tell anybody else. And that was always like instilled in me. Like, you have to make sure that you are just a good person. And that's what it is. I was raised also by my grandmother for like the first kind of couple of years as well. And she was a very humble person. So all of these things, like family and my elders and, you know, they've just been a really big part in shaping who I am.
And do those values then flow into how you do business and who you choose to work with as well?
Absolutely. Like, I've had my share of people that are just in the business world, but just don't have any of those. And I can see, it's like, well, you obviously clearly weren't raised well. But it does shape the foundations of who I am in business. So I'm somebody with a high level of integrity. I say what I'm going to do. I'm very transparent, very honest. And those are like my values. And so I feel like my clients trust me. Like, they trust me to deliver good work and to come through for them.
How do you then, if you're working with someone who displays differing values to you, how do you typically handle it?
I don't work with them anymore. Like, I'm just like, I'm at that space now where I don't want to work with companies that... and people that don't have the basic manners and respect. Like, ghosting people is just really rude, especially, for example, if you've worked with someone. People that just kind of like discard people, I won't work with them again. Like, I think it's important to have integrity and understand that, you know, how to just behave. And I'm very surprised. I'm like, how are people behaving like this? Like, it's just crazy to me. Yeah. So I now feel like, I don't want to work with people like that.
And you mentioned, I guess, being open, being very transparent. Like, you've shared so much stuff about, like, yourself, your past, your personal life, all that kind of stuff, like, some real intimate, vulnerable things on other platforms. And it's like, is there a level of transparency where you just stop at, and where you're like, okay, this is... I'm happy to put this out to the public, but this is my stuff. And how do you kind of determine what to share and what not to share?
I don't share about my, like, personal, so, like, romantic partners. I don't know if I would share when I eventually do have kids. Yeah, so I try and keep family, like, romantic stuff out. And it's so funny. I have a knack of sharing, but making people feel like I'm sharing, but I'm not actually. So I kind of... I do share the struggles, but I'm very careful about divulging too much. But I think anything that's very sacred to me, like my romantic life, I don't share. So that's my boundary. And I think stuff around, you know, mental health or really dark moments, I don't share. But I will share something that I feel is going to help somebody. So if I feel like, okay, I've gone through this really tough time, and by me sharing, I'm going to help someone, I will. But it's just knowing what things to keep and what things not, and yeah, what to keep and what to not. Yeah.
So if someone's thinking about, I know I need to build a personal brand, which we all do in this day and age, what would your advice be around how to go about doing that in a way that helps amplify them, the work they're doing, whether they're in a corporate, whether they're entrepreneurs, doesn't really make a difference.
I mean, this term personal branding, I think it's just been pushed in our faces for quite a long time. I don't know if I'm particularly comfortable with the term, I guess, personal branding, but I think it's just allowing people to see, I guess, the human behind the name, right? That's all it is. So people want to know, okay, who is Vanessa? What do you stand for? What do you like? And just sharing that rather than trying to build a persona. I think people, when they think about personal branding, they think, oh, I need to be this persona. I need to be a CEO, or I need to be a founder. I need to be a director. No, you just have to be you. Share who you are as a human being. What are your values? How do you make decisions? What's your, you know, what is your morning routine? Or just sharing who you are as a human. And I think that's what personal branding is, especially if you are an entrepreneur. People are now buying into humans. They're not buying, like, I'm wearing, for example, Gymshark. I'm about to go to the gym after this. But I actually, all of my workout kit is Gymshark, because actually, Ben, who's the founder of Gymshark, I started to watch his journey from early on, and I'm buying into him as a founder and how he started his business from his garage and how he's growing his brand. It's not because it's great product, but I'm not buying Gymshark because it's a great product. I'm actually buying it because actually I believe in the founder and his journey. So I think people need to understand, people aren't necessarily buying products. They're buying people. They're buying the story. They're buying the humans who are on a mission, and they want to be part of that mission. And I think that's where we need to go. And I think what's frustrating on LinkedIn, I'm getting a bit annoyed of LinkedIn. I mean, I work with LinkedIn a lot. They're one of our strategic partners, and I'm one of their creators on there and a top voice. But LinkedIn is getting frustrating, seeing just what I would say, you know, and I keep it real. This is part of me, it's my, I guess, my personal brand. It's just a lot of nonsense about people just posting a picture of them, and then you've got that AI caption, you know, I ate cereal today. You know, people just following what's on LinkedIn, and it's like, please, that's not what personal branding is. Posting for the sake of it, you know, I had Weetabix today. Here's a picture of my coffee. Do you know that, you know, when I think about coffee and how I choose my coffee, and this is the, like, people are just posting for the sake of posting. It's like, guys, let's take a step back. Let's find out who you are as a person. Like, let's find out about your journey. People want to know, like, and even I had someone talk about this on my own podcast, but LinkedIn, the creator team were saying, actually, you know, in terms of like how you are on social media, people want to know the journey. So don't just post for the sake of it. Post, you know, to share and to help, and share how you've overcome, not just like, hey, you know, I'm really happy I've got this and that. Those posts are great, but actually it's like sharing something meaningful and not just doing what everyone else is doing. I hate following the crowd, and I hate samey things. It's really, really annoying.
Then Vanessa, viral moments. Mm-hmm. Every time I write deep and personal stuff, no one seems to click. But then I see all these different people writing ridiculousness, and they're getting viral mm-hmm. posts. So therefore, I want to chase that and get that virality, because surely that's going to help me and my business, isn't it?
No, I mean, I even on my socials, like, my most viral post is me. It was a hobby. I went to like black-owned vineyards in South Africa, and I literally had like maybe even like 300,000 views on that, those content. It was about wine and me just acting a fool. But that's not what gets me like paid campaigns as an influencer. So like, I get paid campaigns as an influencer because of my founder diaries, of my founder journey, of that type of content. And so brands are not looking for viral people, because being viral is not sustainable, number one. They're looking for people who have a steady flow of engagement. And now brands are now looking at how many shares you've got on your post and how many saves. They're not even looking at how many likes, because you could just get a bot to just like. They're looking at saves, shares, and some of the comments. And so that's what I focus now on. I focus on trying to think about how useful are my posts. You know, what's the quality of them? How many people are saving them? How many people are sharing them? That's the key. So I get what you're saying. We kind of feel like we need to go viral, but brands are not looking at that. They're looking at, okay, the quality of this person's community and how engaged these posts are. That's what really counts. So for example, they want to know, for example, like if they're looking to bring in a speaker to come in and speak for a company conference, and you've got an influencer that maybe has 250,000 followers, but they're not engaging. They can't command a room. They can't, you know, curate, you know, compelling stories or narratives. But they've got that viral following, but they don't have the skills. But maybe there's somebody who's got 20,000 followers, but can command a room, can inspire, can convert. They'll go for the person with 20,000 followers because they're going to bring more value into their organization or their activation. So I think we need to focus on longevity and quality rather than just going viral.
So that's a word for someone right there. Because it's so true.
Yeah.
So I just recently I was saying to someone that a lot of I've never made any business with my viral posts.
Yeah.
And I've had multi-million viral posts. I've never made a business with them. The small, tiny ones that seem to be not blow. I get someone hit me with a DM like, I've read this and I'm curious and leads to something else. I'm like, you didn't even comment, you didn't put anything whatsoever, but they hit me up. Yeah. And that's the reality of it, isn't it? It's not about chasing virality. It's there's something that's behind that people that really care are gonna tap into. So it's such a really good point you just made.
Exactly. That's the thing, and that we need to kind of focus on. Yeah.
How are you then looking at life now, especially with AI that just keeps on snowballing? And obviously, everywhere you look at, everyone's having a conversation around AI and business, AI and people. Like, how are you thinking about things when it comes to technology and your business, especially what you want to build going forward?
Yeah, I mean, AI is a tool. It's fantastic. So AI has really transformed my business, especially as a content creator. It's been absolutely phenomenal. And even it's really around AI is not going to replace jobs. It's just going to make everything more efficient and more impactful. And it's really around how you train your models. How do you create your custom GPTs? And how you prompt and how you get all of these tools to work for you. And so that's what I've been, you know, doing, is trying to get my team to sort of like leverage those tools so it can make us more efficient. And I think, you know, but I also think it's important, like, for example, copywriting. What I've seen is AI, if you're a copywriter, AI, for example, might... If somebody was hiring you just for copywriting, you might need to think about how you can add more value, because AI in terms of copywriting is really, really good. But it's more so around being strategic. And so it's thinking about, okay, yes, somebody might say, okay, well, we don't need to have maybe copywriters. But then if you're a copywriter, you could sort of be more of a strategic consultant, because you still need to think about campaigns and ideas. I think AI cannot replace human thoughts. It cannot replace being strategic thinkers. It can't. It cannot do it. So I think what I've seen is AI just helps us get to things more quicker, and we need to just focus on the value of our brain power and not expertise, because AI is not going to challenge you. So I'll give you an example. AI is just there to kiss your ass. And so if you're trying to use AI to think about, okay, like, this marketing strategy, yes, they can rank and score it out of 10, but it's not really gonna like critique and really drill down and challenge you and, you know, really kind of get the best out of you. It kind of, AI gets you to about 80%, but that 20%, you still need a human to kind of really get you to the 100%. So that's what I would say.
To recognize it's a tool to help you speed up
the
process, but it's not going to do everything for you, basically, which is what some people are hoping it will.
Exactly.
You're someone who, I'm going to say, has had a lot of huge viral moments. You've had a lot of starts and then stops and starts and stuff. Like, I think your podcast was like number 4, and then you stopped it for a while and you came back up. I'm always curious, how do high performers like you, who have multiple ideas, deal with starting and stopping? And how do you make peace with both starting and stopping?
Yeah, I'm with the podcast and thing, I'm really just pissed off with myself around that. Because, I have to let that go. I'm just like, you know what, let it go. But I'm like, when I started it again, got to number 4 on the business charts. And I feel like 2021 was the time where I really could have... been doing it full time, right, by now. But you know what, everything happens for a reason. Now I'm really more committed, and I still feel like there's a gap and a space for me. But I think it's just like you have, I think my detriment was I put so much pressure on myself. So I was like, I got overwhelmed and thought, oh my God, like, how am I gonna, you know, rather than just being consistent, I wanted to be perfect. So now I'm more focused on just being consistent. Like, everything doesn't have to be perfect, and I'm figuring things out. So we're constantly, what we brought in-house is A-B testing. So I'm constantly A-B testing in real time with my podcast, and just being open with my audience and saying, look, I'm figuring it out as I go along, rather than trying to be perfect. And I think that's where I was with, for example, the podcast. I wanted it to be kind of perfect, and because I wanted it to be perfect, I got overwhelmed. 6 months went by. Right now I'm just like, doesn't matter, put stuff out, just interview interesting people, do solo episodes in between, like, just make sure, you know, you've got stuff coming out. And that's now what I'm focused on. Yeah, that consistency piece.
How do you shift from perfection to consistency? Because that is also not easy to do. So yeah, you've done it. So I'm curious, how did you do it?
God, you just have to think, just let me just do it. Like, you have to have a deadline. Like, I have to, like, I'm now shifting a bit. Like, I'm consistent now with my podcast, for example. So I'm not going to do it weekly now. I'm doing it bi-weekly. So there's the quality there. But I think you just have to set yourself some deadlines and, like, be tough with yourself and just think, sometimes good is better than perfect. So as long as something is decent enough, just get it out. Like, and as long as having a standard. So if it's like your standard is 80%, just put it out. Like, you know, that's really what is my barometer for that kind of, like, moving from perfect to just being consistent, is I having my sort of level of just basic standards. And if it meets that, that's fine. Just put it out.
So are there any ideas that you've had previously where you're like, you know, I wish I should have done this, I wish I should have done that? And how do you learn to not live in that state of, I should have done it, in that state of regret, and focus more on the what can you do now and in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I just think, you know what, like, life is really long. So just think, like, okay, you've not really been great for the last couple of years, but there's no limit. Like, I think we kind of live, we need to shift. Like, for example, like, they say 40s is now the new 30s, right? So you're never too late now. So it's like, just give yourself some grace. Yes, you stop, start. But the main thing is, start again today. So, like, today, start again today and just keep going forward. So now with me, with my content creation journey, I'm like, I'm just going forward. Like, I can't look back. I can't change anything, because the past is the past. All I can change now is what I'm going to do today and going forward. And having, like, friends that, you know, can be your accountability partners, that can check in with you and just say, look, how are you doing with this? Keep going.
If I was talking to you a year from today, what would you have hoped to have achieved?
So have my podcast, like, at least, like, be, like, at least in the top 100, like, careers podcasts. That would be quite nice. To have, you know, done at least 52 episodes or 50 episodes of my podcast, so having it come out weekly, to really have made some way, to have some great guests. That's what I want to do. So one of my things that I want to really focus on is my content creator journey. And leaning more into that. So I really want to have really developed a really strong content creator brand and have a podcast that's really making impact and traction. That's where I want to be in a year's time today.
Okay. And then what is the best way that people can actually support your journey and support what it is that you are doing and building? Because, like I said, you've 60,000 plus women that you've poured into over the years, and so much you're doing. There's a payback. The community can actually help you out. So what does that look like?
Just listen. Like, if you can like my stuff, comment on my post, share my content, you know, watch my podcast, comment. Like, engaging with what I'm putting out is the best way of support. And it's easy and it's free. You have to pay for it. So just do that is what would help. Yeah.
I guess my last question to you is how do you define leadership?
Just creating your own path, not following others, not following the trends, like living in your own truth, in your own lane, and having conviction in you doing that. That is what true leadership is. It's around setting the standards, not being a follower and just doing what everyone else is doing.
I'm curious, who is your biggest, I'm going to say, example or role model?
I'd say Oprah. She's just the GOAT, because what she was doing back in the 80s was absolutely unheard of. And that's my inspiration. It's like, Vanessa, like, don't go with what everyone is doing. So when she was doing her talk show, everyone was kind of trying to go down that Jerry Springer, Sally Raphael, you know, talk show, trash, whatever. And she stuck to her guns around using, you know, TV to help people live their best lives. So for me, she's taught me that not everyone's going to get what you're doing. But stay true to your purpose and people will eventually catch up. Don't follow what the trends are. Whenever I've tried to follow what the trends are, I make mistakes.
But to your point around life is long, it's interesting when I hear you talk about an 8-year-old girl who had a voice and was told to be quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And now you are utilizing your voice and that's going out to millions and millions of people. That life truly is long because the dreams that you had, mm-hmm. you're living out.
Yeah.
And there's so much more to come, but you're doing what you always have been in your heart, mm-hmm. and it's making an impact on millions and millions of lives around the world, directly and indirectly. So it's just a very good example of how we don't always connect the dots sometimes, but actually mm-hmm. we are living out our dreams.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I appreciate that. Definitely appreciate your thoughts around that. Thank you.
I appreciate you coming on the podcast. It's been an amazing episode. There's so many gems you dropped. I'm like, okay, that's another one. That's another one. Like, it's just been great just hearing you talk and hearing you share like this. So really, really appreciate your time and coming on the podcast today. And every single thing about Vanessa, about the app, the website, how you can work with the organization. But also, more importantly, as she has said, how you can tap into the podcast, comment, get involved with what she's doing, what she's building. Will be available in the show notes for you. So definitely support her.
Thank you. Thanks for having me as well as a guest. I've had a good time. Really lovely chat.
Good. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's Everyday Leadership. We will see you all next week.